Why are so many women removing their breast implants? How can we address infertility naturally? What is birth control really doing for the body? How is it affecting our immune system? Is there a more natural fix for hypothyroidism? We are talking about all of this and so much more on today's episode of Relatable. We are speaking with Dr. Josh Axe. He is a functional medicine doctor. He's got so much insight for us on all these things, as well as on herbal medicine. He is also going to give us his biggest piece of health advice to change your life. You are going to learn so much from him. I know I did on this episode of Relatable, which is brought to you by our friends at Good Ranchers. Go to goodranchers.com. Use code Allie at checkout. That's goodranchers.com, code Allie. Dr. Axe, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. Can you tell everyone who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Josh Axe. I'm the founder of Ancient Nutrition. I am a functional medicine doctor and really focus on helping people use food as medicine, also mindset medicine to heal. And I have a wife, Chelsea Axe, and two daughters. I got a 4-year-old and a 4-month-old.
Oh, okay. Functional medicine. A lot of people have different ideas about functional medicine, whether they really know what it is or not. Their impression might be that it's some woo-woo witch doctor magic, and other people might have a better impression of what functional medicine is. I'm someone who has a better impression in that I have positive thoughts about functional medicine, but if I'm honest, I don't really know everything that it entails. Sure. So can you describe that for us?
Yeah. So the way that I would, describe it is, you know, when somebody goes to see a conventional medical doctor, what they're trained to do is diagnose and treat with a chemical, with a drug and medication. And those have been created by the pharmaceutical industry. So that's it. And so when they go to school, there's zero nutrition training, zero lifestyle training. There's none of that. Functional medicine really focuses on, rather than prescribing a blood pressure pill for high blood pressure, we're going to say, well, hey, let's give you some, let's try and get more to the root cause. And so why is your blood pressure high in the first place? Okay, there's stress. Okay, it looks like your diet is very high in sugar. We've got some bad fats in your diet. You're not moving much. Okay, let's change all of that. And let's really work on your lifestyle and your diet, and maybe use some things like supplementation in order to help you heal, to get more of the root cause of disease. And so, you know, another example of this is like, if someone has high cholesterol, somebody would typically, if they go to a conventional medical doctor, would get prescribed a statin drug. That statin drug is going to lower cholesterol. The problem is it's also going to increase the risk of a heart attack in the future and numerous other issues. So functional medicine doctor is going to say, okay, we're going to go and get to the root cause. We're going to prescribe or recommend turmeric, magnesium, vitamin D, dietary changes. We want you to start walking every single day, things like that, in order to heal. And you know, when I ran my practice, it was predominantly women, like a lot of hypothyroidism, a lot of people with autoimmune disease. And so the idea there is really, we want to get to the root cause and then typically use food, supplementation, and natural treatments to help somebody heal.
You know, it's interesting because I haven't had a whole lot of interaction with doctors. I mean, I've been relatively healthy, but I do have hypothyroid. And it's interesting that when you talk to your standard endocrinologist, they're nice enough people. They say that they want to help you. When you ask them, okay, but what caused this? And I know there may be different answers based on Hashimoto's or different kinds of hypothyroidism. And is there anything that I can do in my life to help this? The answer is there's no root cause and there's nothing that you can do except take Synthroid, which I have because, you know, I want the right thyroid levels and I've had to have that in order to get pregnant. But still, I find myself thinking almost every day, I really wish I didn't have to rely on this medication. I'm thankful for medication when it's needed.
Yeah.
But I wish someone would just tell me at least if there's something I can do to supplement thyroid health, and my doctors say, nope, there's nothing that you can do to help yourself.
Well, let me tell you.
Okay. So, I'm sure there's a lot of people out here who want this information too.
Yeah. You know, hypothyroidism, I think I saw something recently that 60% of women have hypothyroidism and they don't know it. Mm. So it's incredibly prevalent. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, biggest signs, fatigue, thinning hair, could be fertility. I mean, there's a number of cold body temperature. So when you look at any sort of ancient form of medicine, the idea there of what's really causing it, it actually tends to start more in your adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. And so imagine your adrenals as a battery. If you turn your phone on, you know, what's it at? Is it 80%, 40%? When that battery gets too low and your adrenals are in too much of a fight or flight response all the time. And there's a lot of things that can do that. Lack of quality sleep, being on, devices all the time with blue light. There's numerous things that can start to sort of lower that battery. So we want to really build the battery up. In Chinese medicine, they would call that qi. In Western medicine, they would call that ATP or cellular energy. So the health of our mitochondria. And so what you really want to be able to do is increase that. And so, of course, lowering stress helps, but there are herbs that really help that. Ashwagandha is the primary herb, has the most clinical literature on improving symptoms of both hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's. There's a few other things that do similar things. Cordyceps mushrooms, ginseng will also help. So those definitely help. In addition, I would say there are certain herbs that you really want to work on warming up your body. Again, think about most women with hypothyroid are cold, like they tend to get colder extremities. And so to warm up the body, herbs like cinnamon and ginger on a regular basis, doing more soups and warming foods, like there's a misconception. A lot of times people think, and you'd be a prime example of this, to where you're really conscious, you want to be healthy. And so you might do something like a salad, but salads are good for maybe anti-cancer properties, cleansing the liver, but it's actually not as good for hypothyroid because raw vegetables are more cooling to the body. We really need to warm the body up. Mm. And so in order to do that, again, soups and stews and cinnamon and ginger and things that start to warm the body internally will start to help that. So Anyways, there's just a few ideas.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's definitely one thing I don't know a lot about is herbal medicine. And I'll just be honest, and maybe I reflect the attitudes of some people in the audience, when I hear herbal medicine and when I hear Chinese medicine, I do start to think of, and I'm not really sure why, like New Age mysticism type stuff. So Dispel that kind of mentality for us.
Yeah. By the way, I was one of those people.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a home where I had one of these moms, amazing Christian mom, but everything was the devil. Everything that wasn't, you know, you read about in the Bible. Now there are actually quite a few herbs that are talked about in the Bible, but, and here's the other thing that people don't realize. If people are okay with pharmaceuticals, they should be absolutely way more okay with herbs. I mean, probably 80%. Now, currently, it's about 33% of pharmaceuticals are just directly synthetic compounds from herbs. So when you're looking at an herb, metformin, that's from lilac. I mean, it's an aspirin, that's from birch.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So all medications are taken almost.
That's true. That's
from herbals. And so I do think that here's why this happened. A lot of Chinese medicine, the basis is off of something called Taoism. And Taoism is really this idea of everything is interrelated. You hear things like yin and yang. But really, these things are talked about in Genesis in a way, in terms of, you know, in the beginning was night and day and earth and sky and man and woman. I mean, and got work and rest. And so that they just use different terminology that sounds different to us. All that being said, you know, herbs are things that, you know, God created them to grow. I believe for us to use as medicine, and there's way less side effects. I mean, they work more naturally with our own system. And so that's a viewpoint I think a lot of people have. But what I've seen is the past 15 years, it's really changed a lot. I've seen a lot more Christians start to, as they've understood and read about herbs and what they do, they start understanding that, oh, these are things that God put here that are much more natural. I believe much more, I don't want to say, I'll just say this. You know, there's a Bible verse that reminds me of this. God, you know, God will bring blessing and will add no trouble to it. You know, there's a proverb that says that essentially. And there's not a single medication without a side effect. Not a single one.
Yeah.
Birth control depletes your body of a load of nutrients. A baby aspirin is the NSAIDs are the 15th leading killer in the country today. The third leading killer in all of the Western world today are the adverse side effects of our medical system. And so Anyways, that's a little bit of my thoughts on it. Yeah. But I believe, you know, we're using it in our food. I mean, turmeric has been used in our food, or dill or parsley or ginger or garlic for years. So we're just doing a little bit of higher doses of those most of the time.
Yeah. And would you say that there is ever a place for pharmaceutical drugs?
Absolutely. 100%. Here's how I think about this. I believe that most pharmaceuticals should be used for a much shorter period of time than they are. For instance, if somebody goes in with clinical depression, they go into their physician, their doctor might say, you're going to be on this drug, and they may plan to keep them on it the rest of their life. That's not intentionally, if you go back and read the founding of, you know, the creation of these drugs, it was supposed to be for a short period of time, maybe 3 months, and work to get them off it because there are side effects. So here's what I think this should look like. Whether it's hypothyroidism or autoimmune disease or any condition, somebody goes into a doctor. I believe functional medicine doctors really should be more of the primary care. They're going in. The first thing you're doing is saying, let's change your diet. Let's change your lifestyle. Let's lower the stress. Let's try some vitamins and herbs and things like that. Okay. If we exhaust that and it doesn't work, okay, now let's work on getting you on a medication for a period of time. At the same time, trying to get you off it over time.
Okay, quick pause to tell you about our first sponsor for the day. That's Adele Natural Cosmetics. We're talking about the importance of ensuring that what we are putting in our body and how we are behaving, the kind of things that we put on our body, ensuring that all of these things are actually good for us. And one thing you can do to help take charge of your health is to ensure that the cosmetics that you're using, that the skincare that you're using is actually free of the toxins that unfortunately fill a lot of the normal cosmetics that you are getting from the big name brands. At Adele Natural Cosmetics, all of their products are free of parabens, of synthetic fragrances, nanoparticles, petroleum-based products, anything else. They always search for the most high quality, nutrient dense ingredients, and all of their stuff really works. Their skincare has been a total game changer for my skin. It's made it a lot brighter, a lot smoother, a lot more moisturized and healthier. I love wearing their makeup when I'm not in the studio. It's light coverage, but it works really well. Go to AdeleNaturalCosmetics.com. If you use code Allie at checkout, you'll get 25% off your first order. That's AdeleNaturalCosmetics.com, code Allie. And you mentioned how doctors are, how medical students are being trained in these medical schools. And we've talked about this before, that basically you're just kind of memorizing diagnoses and then what medication or treatment you are supposed to apply to a particular diagnosis. And they are very often not taught, one, how the body is connected. Maybe they're going into a certain specialty, and so they're only focusing on that. They have to tap another specialist when they're actually practicing medicine to help them understand this other concept. But really, how you're describing functional medicine is not only understanding the root causes and the more natural routes to take, but also how everything is potentially connected in the body, so that you're not just going to a functional medicine doctor for your brain and then another one for your gut, but the functional medicine doctor knows how these things work together, right?
Absolutely. So here's a prime example of this: Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Okay, most doctors would try and treat it like it's a thyroid issue. Now, some may use something to suppress the immune system and treat it like an autoimmune disease. But in reality, it's starting in the gut with something called, it's called intestinal permeability or leaky gut. So, you know, if a doctor is really trying to get at the root cause, they're looking at how one system affects the other. For instance, we know anger, the emotion, affects the liver, which then affects your heart and then increases your blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So, but again, most doctors, you're right. They look at the body in one system they're trained in and ignore all the rest. And if they can change this one symptom, they're really not paying attention to all the other side effects and damage they're doing throughout, you know, throughout the rest of the body. I mean, you can ask me almost any medication. I can be like, well, this is the side effect. And here's the crazy part. Most people think that medications have all of the side effects listed on the label. They don't. Every medication depletes the body of different types of nutrients. If you go and look at metformin for diabetes, does it say on there depletes your body of coenzyme Q10 and vitamin B12? It doesn't. So there's a lot of people having side effects that they don't realize that they're having, causing other issues in their body.
Yeah. Wow. And it seems like it's such a responsibility and a big burden for those of us who didn't go to medical school. We don't have a medical background to try to understand all that, because you're describing a side effect that even if a doctor told me it causes this, I'd be like, well, okay, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
And if this doctor is telling me, well, it doesn't really matter what side effects that you'll get from this medication, you have to take it, then I'm thinking they know best.
Well, and think about it like this, at an even more expansive level, think about COVID and, you know, Dr. Fauci, the CDC, those recommendations. It's like, okay, well, we're going to have everybody wear masks and stand 6 feet apart and go on lockdowns and, you know, get people on ventilators and all these things. Okay. Well, you may be treating this, what you believe is a good treatment for a viral infection. What are the consequences? Alcoholism, more drug abuse, depression, loneliness. In fact, a study came out recently showing that loneliness, if you're feeling extreme loneliness, it's the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So there are really major side effects. And you know this, and this is one of the reasons why I respect you so much as a political, you know, commentator, and your wisdom is you understand trade-offs. That's one of the things that doesn't happen in the medical profession, is they're not aware of, okay, you can treat this, but then what are all the repercussions that are happening in the body?
And the pharmaceutical companies are, of course, financially incentivized not to talk about those trade-offs.
Yes.
And I mean, the whole system that the pharmaceutical companies are actually marketing directly to the consumer. It's like, and in those commercials that they have, even though they have the litany of side effects that they read at the very end, all of the people look like their life has been changed. No more psoriasis or whatever it is because of this drug. Then you go to the doctor. The doctor may even be financially incentivized to say, yes, let's put you on that. It's a crazy system that we have here in the United States, that the burden is really on the patient, but at the same time, the burden is on the patient to bring to our doctor, okay, we want to be on this medication sometimes. But then if we ask questions about the trade-offs, about the side effects, we're kind of made to feel stupid.
Yeah.
Like we have no idea what we're talking about. So like, which one is it? We're being marketed to directly by the pharmaceutical companies, but if we question the pharmaceutical companies to our doctor, then we're told to shut up.
Yeah.
It's really hard to be a patient.
It's the exact opposite of what it should be. My entire career has been focused on, I want to help the person, the patient, I want to help them know everything they can about their body and how to heal themselves. I'm not trying to be the healer. Like, your body, God's the healer. I'm not trying to be that person for you, versus there's a lot of doctors with a God complex out there. It's pretty prevalent.
Yeah. When COVID was going on, when we were at the thick of it, with the background and the expertise that you had, I mean, what were you thinking when you were watching all of this unfold?
Well, I was really... So I came out, let me give you an example. I don't know if you know Gabe and Rebecca Lyons, they're good friends of mine. Mm-hmm. They had me on their podcast. And so I went and did a podcast and I shared, listen, there are a lot of different types of viral infections, okay? And certain ones you treat differently, but generally there are principles about if you have a viral infection of things you need to do. And the philosophy that I have that's very different than the conventional medical system is that I don't try and treat disease. I try and strengthen your own body, so then your body can fight the disease. Because if your own immune system is strong, your body will eliminate the disease on its own. That's the thing. It's like, why does one person get sick in the office and the other person doesn't?
Right.
So that's that. It's part of that. And so when this was going on, I went through recommendations. I said, we need to do high dose vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C. People need to get outside and walk every single day. Started going through this whole protocol in ancient forms of medicine. You would chicken soup, okay? Foods that are light yellow and white tend to be the ones that are most immune boosting. So think garlic, onions, ginger, chicken bone broth, miso. Those are all things that are really strengthening. So I recommended those foods. And then I actually had a Christian magazine go and write like a hit piece on me saying, Dr. Axe is unscientific. Mm. And so it's just wild to me. So I knew that this... I generally knew what was going to start to happen in terms of all the side effects when you isolate people and people get less time outdoors. But it was like, even though I was saying certain things at the time, it's like I tried to walk up to the edge on platforms like YouTube, but not try and overstep, because it's like, well, you know, people didn't want to be fully deplatformed. I still tried to push it as far as I could, but it was sort of like, I want to lead the horse to water, but not make the people drink in terms of how I tried to communicate.
I think we all felt like that. And of course, I'm not a health expert, but when I did have doctors on who were talking about, I don't know, we might need to slow our roll when it comes to ventilators, remdesivir, maybe we should look at ivermectin. We had to put a lot of it behind the paywall because we knew that, okay, if we get taken off YouTube because of this message, then we can't convey any of the other important messages that are out there. So a lot of people had to thread that needle and walk that line, and it was really tough watching. I mean, even someone just from a common sense perspective, okay, they're encouraging things that could actually encourage and exacerbate something like obesity.
Yes.
And we know that obesity makes COVID a lot more dangerous, and we're not even allowed to question that.
Well, that's one of the things I mentioned when I was doing this talk is that 94% of people that died of COVID was due to comorbidity.
Yeah.
It was more due to the condition they had, not COVID itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you weren't really supposed to talk about that.
No.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, next sponsor for the day is another super fitting one for the conversation that we are having, and that is We Heart Nutrition. This is the absolute best place to get women's vitamins for women of all ages. I've really been loving their postnatal vitamin. I also take their iron supplement. I take all the stuff because I really think that it helps. Like right down to the packaging, you can tell that this is all high quality, but most importantly, their ingredients come in the most bioavailable form so that your body can actually absorb it. I think it's made a really big difference in my immune health over the past few months. You notice last year I was getting sick all the time. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but really since the beginning of the year, since I made the switch to We Heart Nutrition, I've just been a lot healthier. And I've got to give credit to their supplements. And this is a pro-life Christian company. They donate a portion of their profits to pro-life pregnancy centers. They've raised tens of thousands of dollars for them. It's just a win all around. So go ahead and make the switch. Go to WeHeartNutrition.com. Use code Allie for 20% off your order. WeHeartNutrition.com, code Allie. Let's go back to something that you mentioned, birth control.
Yeah.
This is a hot topic right now. We've talked about it a few times on my podcast. Of course, the ethics behind it from a pro-life position and all of that. But I'm interested in what you said about birth control depleting the body of certain things that it needs. What do you mean by that?
Well, first off, I want to say this is a really important issue because 65% of women between the ages of 15 and 49 are on birth control. So it is a lot of women. And when you look at birth control, what it does in terms of specifically increasing estrogen, that acts like a fertilizer as well. But the biggest symptom I had that women have when I see them after they are getting off birth control is candida and yeast overgrowth. They start to get really major GI issues as well because of what's happening there with the hormone balance, hormone imbalance of estrogen. The other thing is, so the nutrients that are depleted, every B vitamin, you can list off every B1, B2, B3, B6, B9, which is folate, and then methylcobalamin, which is B12. So every single one of those is depleted. Part of those are depleted because what birth control does is it starts to deplete good bacteria in the gut and increase bad bacteria. Mm. There's a study out of Stanford that found that when you decrease your good bacteria in your gut and increase bad, your B vitamin absorption drops by over 50%. So really there's a lot of B vitamins being decreased. Vitamin C is also decreased. Zinc, which is important for immune function. And then of course, probiotics are wiped out. So those are some of the big side effects that are not listed on the label that women don't realize they're having. There was another study that came out recently as well that showed that if you take birth control for more than 5 years, it triples your risk of certain types of autoimmune disease, specifically inflammatory bowel disease and Sjogren's disease. And so some of this is new research that people haven't even heard before, but the reality is that if people are on birth control, there are major side effects. It's increasing your risk of autoimmune disease. So basically the big thing it's doing, it's weakening your immune system. Mm-hmm. And causing nutritional deficiencies. And B vitamin deficiencies really affect numerous organs. I mean, your thyroid especially. in your adrenal glands. And so again, these are facts a lot of people don't know.
You know, it's interesting. Of course, I'm mapping together my own health issues. And I was put on birth control in high school, like a lot of my friends were, who were not sexually active.
Yeah.
But because it was like, okay, you're 17 years old and your hormones are still working themselves out. And so like your period is a little bit wonky or something. And the doctor says, well, let's just put you on birth control. Now, we always talk about, we look back and we're like, did she just assume that we actually were all sexually active and she was trying to protect us or whatever? But she kind of put us all on Yaz, which now you see those commercials like where you put on Yaz. If you have XYZ symptom, you could be, you know, get some compensation or something, which is crazy. But I look back and it's interesting because I just thought, okay, well, this is just what I need. And of course, she says it'll help your acne. It'll help you just feel better in general. I don't even know. But then it wasn't too long after that, a couple of years later, that I was out of nowhere as like 19 diagnosed with hypothyroid. She didn't say it was Hashimoto's.
Okay. Yep.
And then another thing, I think a couple of years later, I was 21 years old when I got shingles. And then for some reason, after I got shingles, I don't even know what it was, but I just was like, I'm not going to do birth control anymore. I'm getting off birth control. And I did. And I was totally fine. My cycle was totally regular. I didn't have acne.
Yep.
I didn't have any problems. I did not need to be on birth control. And I've never gotten that sick again. Not that I've never gotten sick, but shingles as a 21-year-old is crazy.
Well, think about what I just mentioned there, what birth control affects. It affects your immune system, weakens that, and it affects B vitamins, specifically thiamine and some of the others that affect your, really, really run your thyroid. So when you're on it, you tend to not have as many symptoms. When you get off, that's when you're going to start having the symptoms that you had. One thing that I think would help a lot of women is if they've ever taken birth control, you can either get tested for how well your body, it's something called methylation, how well your body is methylating. But certain people don't methylate very well. And so their body isn't utilizing and converting B vitamins correctly. And so a lot of women who have your exact same experience can get on methylated B vitamins, and it can really, really help some of those symptoms of thyroid issues.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Speaking of a disease or an illness that is specifically kind of affecting women is breast plant illness, which is a new thing for me that I've heard of, women getting their breast implants removed because it was causing all kinds of like flu-like symptoms. Can you tell us like what is going on there?
Yeah. So, well, let's start off with what you're putting in your body. You're putting in silicone, which is sort of a mixture between rubber meets plastic. Okay. It's fossil fuels or certain chemicals there that make up an implant. And so, you know, what they've done is they've done studies where they've said, well, it's not really leaching. Well, they've done other studies to show, well, if you put it in vinegar or alcohol or certain things, well, it does start to leach. And so I think the leaching of the implant, the chemicals there is very minor, but it does have, but think about minor leaching over 10, 20, 30 years, what starts to happen in the body. The other thing is if there's a rupture, I mean, there's a tremendous, it's like a flood of chemicals being released in your system. And there was a recent study that came out. So I mentioned birth control triples your increase of certain autoimmune diseases. Well, breast implants, new study came out showing that it increases your risk of autoimmune disease by 6 to 8 times. And so some of the biggest symptoms of breast implant illness could be rashes, joint pain, hormonal changes, thinning hair. I mean, there's a number of them, but it's really an issue. Like, and this has been a personal thing for me. Like, my mother-in-law had hers removed. She just turned 60, and about 5 years ago, she had hers removed and walked her through the process of detoxing and healing. Good friend of mine, Natalie, Jill. I mean, I probably know 30 people that have had their implants removed. There's a lot of people, and all of them said afterwards, I feel better. I noticed a difference. Here's the other thing that's significant is that when women have had their implants removed and they've had any symptom at all, 75% of the time within 1 year, all of their symptoms are gone.
Wow.
So there's definitely a connection there. And the thing that really saddens me is a lot of these women go into their doctors and they say, it's all in your head. Hey, it's not real. And the reality is there might not be a double blind study on this, but there are millions of individual, or at least let me just say this, at least tens of thousands of individual case studies where women are saying, no, this, you know, really affected my health in a negative way.
Yeah. Okay, we're kind of jumping around here because I'm kind of going back to the birth control conversation a little bit, but we're kind of staying in the realm of women. But I guess this affects men too when we're talking about fertility rates.
Yeah.
And of course, I see it most in women who are struggling to have like a normal cycle. They've got hormonal issues, they've got endocrine problems, autoimmune problems, and they're going to the fertility specialist and they're hearing IVF is your only option.
Yep.
There's no root cause of this. You're just one of those weird cases that you can't have kids. They want a kid. They go through with the IVF, but their health problems are never really addressed. And very often, even after spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in IVF, they can't have healthy pregnancies because there's something going on with their bodies that's not being addressed. So, like, what have you seen in this rise in infertility, number one? And what do you think about how we can be addressing this better?
Yeah. Yeah, this is something I have a lot of firsthand experience with in helping women who were struggling with infertility get pregnant. I mean, I could have a load of them call in or share their stories of what we did. That there's two primary issues here. So one thing to know is 1 in 6 women struggle with infertility. That's a pretty high rate. And 1 in 4 pregnancies are miscarried or close to that. So, I mean, so we're talking, this is really a significant issue. So when we look at the main cause, it really has to do with the reproductive organs and the adrenals, the relationship there. And it's sort of what I mentioned earlier, even connection to the thyroid, is that your battery is very low. And we need to start to build up the battery there. And so there are certain things that do that. One is a healthy diet. You know, getting a diet that's very nutrient dense, you especially need B vitamins and selenium, zinc, magnesium are some of the most important. And so I would say eating a diet rich in wild organic meat, fruit like berries specifically would be good. Rice has some unique nutrients that are good for that. And then I would also say vegetables. And so that really should be the basis of the diet. But we really want to strengthen up the adrenal glands. That's really the idea there. There are a category of herbs called adaptogens that tend to be the most beneficial for that. Ashwagandha is one of those. And so especially if a woman has hypothyroid and infertility, that's probably the top herb that would be recommended. Mm. And then there's others. I mentioned cordyceps, Don Quai is another. But there's a lot of adaptogen, reishi mushroom. Those would all be helpful. Methylated B vitamins, again, I would say B vitamins and adaptogens. Those are the two categories of things that women would need the most to support getting fertile. Now, there's a second part, and this is especially associated with miscarriage, where conceiving is more adrenal reproductive, carrying is more connected to the pancreas and insulin levels. So if insulin gets high and your blood sugar gets too high, that really has been linked to in studies to miscarriage. And so with that, we want to stop over consuming sugar and refined carbohydrates in those foods. That will cause issues. Exercise can help with that as well. Certain minerals, there's really a unique micro mineral called chromium picolinate that's been shown to help. Cinnamon and fenugreek are two herbs that also help. So those are some things that would help. Now, this is me stepping more into the ancient medicine that I know some people maybe have a little bit of skepticism about. But if we're getting into more of sort of the ideology around it, is that conceiving is really related to going deep and just having peace in your life. Like you have peace, you have purpose. Here's an example of this. People, once they retire, if they don't find something after retiring to live for, like a mission, they die early. It takes years off their life. So that's, we know, so true. Someone having a purpose is actually uniquely tied to longevity and health of your organs. So if a woman feels like, hey, I've got a purpose and I'm also at peace in my life, that, according to these ancient forms of medicine, actually helps with fertility. Now, there's an emotion that actually affects carrying a child, and that is worry. If somebody has a lot of worry and like constantly worrying about everything, obsessing about things, never turns it off, that will affect the pancreas. And I've seen this in people. If anyone's ever worn a continuous blood glucose monitor, you can wear those on your arm, shows your blood sugar levels all the time. You know, if you're even driving a car, it goes up. Any form of stress raises it. So the more you can just balance blood sugar, the way to do that with diet is meat, vegetables, or pretty much it's protein, fat, and fiber. Get protein, fat, and fiber, cut the sugar. That'll help a lot.
Okay, so as we know, the more natural you can be when you are trying to take charge of your health, that's usually the better option. We don't want to rely entirely on pharmaceutical companies, but also we know that these pharmaceuticals can be helpful when we need them. For example, antibiotics can save lives, and you want to make sure that you have access to those antibiotics when you need them. Jace Medical exists so you can have an emergency stash of antibiotics. If you have a certain type of infection that requires antibiotics, you can have them when you need them rather than having to go through the whole rigmarole of going to the pharmacy. You can just have this stash on hand. Unfortunately, we are seeing plenty of supply chain issues, shortages when it comes to the most common medications. And so you might need this year-long supply. It's just better to be safe than sorry. You can also get a year-long supply of the prescriptions that you and your family rely on, so you have them in case of some kind of shortage or emergency. Go to jacemedical.com. They'll send you through their telemedicine process to get these medications that you need. You can use code Allie at checkout for a discount. That's jacemedical.com. You know, I know this is kind of getting a little personal here, but we're talking about like conception and pregnancy, and I am very, very grateful that we've been able to be pregnant and have healthy pregnancies 3 times. I do not take that for granted, but we didn't get pregnant right away. And I just assumed that that's what would happen. As soon as you start trying, that's, you know, the euphemism that we can use. I just thought it would happen. I mean, both of us are relatively healthy. Sure, I have hypothyroid, but it was well managed. And so, but it didn't happen right away. Actually, all 3 times, it took us 4 months. I don't really know why, but I do know the only thing I can think of is really there was kind of, there's always like a mental shift for me around like 3 or 4 months. Before that, I'm stressed. Yeah. I'm stressed out thinking about it and tracking all the different things. Yep. And I've got the app. And then for whatever reason, around 3, 4 months, I'm like, you know what? If it happens, it happens. Yes. And so it's, I just kind of got to let go of it. And then it's always around that time. And I'm not trying to say out there that that's the exact formula that's going to happen for you. But it seems like my friends have had the same experience when you're like, okay, we're just having fun. It's fine. Yep. I'm not going to worry too much about it. That does seem to be, at least for some people, something that helps.
Well, you know how many women I've heard say this? I got pregnant when I stopped trying.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so I think that does speak to what you're saying. And there's a biblical aspect of that too, of just not worrying and not being anxious. And when God tells us over and over again throughout scripture, do not fear, do not be anxious about anything.
Yes.
Really? Anything? Anything. Yes. Do not worry. Rejoice in everything, even in the difficulties. That there, of course, there's spiritual health to that, but we have to also think that the God who made our bodies knows that that is physically good for us too.
Yeah. Well, one thing a lot of people I don't think realize is that different emotions affect different organ systems.
Yeah.
So we know, for instance, high blood pressure is really tied more to anxiousness. And so if you get anxious, your blood pressure will start to rise. Fear, we most people know this one as well, that affects the adrenals. Your body starts producing more cortisol and stress hormones. Worry, stomach, think about if somebody is worrying over a test or exam, let's say, oh, my stomach is like tied in knots. Right. And then the other one would be anger, that affects the liver and gallbladder and lymphatic system. And then grief. You know, I had a patient once who she, and this happens quite frequently, got a divorce and just was grieving about it for years. And then she developed autoimmune disease. But grief is really tied to your immune system. If you grieve, it can cause a cough, a cold. Basically, it's not letting go of the past, able to move forward. So there are, I mean, it's amazing to think how deeply tied our emotional and spiritual well-being is to our physical health.
Yeah. Okay, I've got a question for you on that. I have heard, this is another recent discovery of mine, that there are different theories about how we get sick. Terrain theory versus germ theory, which, okay, this is just my amateur thinking. My amateur thinking is that it's both. I do think like when you're anxious, when you're worried, when you're sad, that of course suppresses your immune system. Your body is using energy in a different way. I know that's true for me. But at the same time, also, I have gotten viruses like from things are clearly contagious to me. and germs do seem to cause illness. Maybe I'm not understanding it correctly. I don't know, but it seems like it wouldn't be both and. What do you think?
You're understanding it.
Or, I mean, it wouldn't be either.
You're understanding exactly right. It's both. It's Bichamp's theory. The train theory is the primary.
See, I haven't heard of this.
Okay. Yeah, the train.
Well, I haven't heard of Bichamp's. I've only heard of.
He's the person who coined the term.
Okay, I didn't even know that.
Terrain theory, where Louis Pasteur was germ theory.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
And so what happens is if your immune system is strong, if you've got zinc, if you have vitamin D, if you're low on stress, if you've got a lot of natural killer cells that are there and ready. So if your body is generally very healthy, you can be exposed to certain viruses and you won't have any symptoms. Now, if it's a virus your body hasn't dealt with before, or certain bacteria or fungus or parasite, whatever it is, then your body oftentimes will express a symptom. And so it is both. It is, the train theory is all about you get sick because your body is sick and not well. Germ theory is you get sick because you're exposed to a germ. And the answer is, again, the Bichamp theory is the primary reason you get sick is because your body is not healthy. But the secondary reason is, yes, you were exposed to a germ and your body doesn't have quite enough, could be natural killer cells or immune cells, in order to fight it off in time. So your body, starts going through a process of doing extra things in order to eliminate it from our systems.
Okay.
But it's both, for sure.
So it's both. Germs can cause.
But the conventional medical system is it's only germ theory.
Yeah, which is why they tell us to sanitize our hands constantly.
And the thing that they're not considering there, this is such a great point with COVID. Well, let's sanitize everything. But now you're harming your terrain, right? So now you're killing good bacteria. I mean, people don't realize this. So the amount of antibiotics we use topically via hand sanitizers and those things is very high. Cleaning products at home. The number one source we get of antibiotics is not prescription. It's via livestock. 80% of antibiotics today are given to cattle.
Yeah.
And so we are getting some of that antibiotic residue. So we have a lot of these things we're exposed to, which can weaken our immune system. And I do think we should wash our hands.
Yeah.
I just think hot water and things that aren't the strongly antibacterial, lightly, it could be an essential oil, something like that would actually be a lot better for our systems.
So if we are deciding, say we're putting our baby in the shopping cart, sitting right in front of us, what would be better for the baby to put their hands on the potentially germy shopping cart handle, or for us to take that Purell sanitizing wipe and wipe it down, in your opinion?
So I've got a two-part answer. Number one is, I don't think you have to wipe it down.
Okay.
Now, there's a great study. And the person who did this study talked about, he said, more kids need to roll around on the New York subway. And so that was the basis of the paper. Now that is filthy. Okay. Yeah. So we know that, but they go through and part of the study was also related to vaginal birth versus C-section.
Yeah.
And really there are studies that show vaginal birth, kids are going to tend to have stronger immune systems. And what they were recommending in the paper was, if you were doing C-section, go and take some of those fluids and some of the bacteria, and then wipe it all over your child afterwards, because it's really an important part of the immune development process. So,
it makes sense.
Yeah. So kids have to have that exposure. Now here's what's better than the germs of the shot on the shopping cart is getting outside in the dirt. Mm-hmm. There are studies that show that kids that grow up on farms, kids that have pets, specifically a dog or cat, have stronger immune systems because they're getting more exposure to natural germs that are in nature. Mm-hmm. The way this works, when we hear of vaccination and immunization, we tend to only think of the shots today. That's the only way to do it. The reality is things like honey, which contains over 200 types of pollen. When you're consuming raw local honey regularly, or local vegetables and fruits, there are microbes in there called soil-based organisms that we expose ourselves to, which then help and allow our body to build a natural immunity to something, strengthening our immune system. So one of the greatest ways to immunize ourselves truly is to have a garden, spend time outdoors, have a pet, visit a farm, ride a horse, which not a lot of people do today.
Yeah.
And I think going back to the conversation about the shopping cart, my best advice would be spray it down with some essential oil, something that's more natural the body can handle, that's not as strong of an antibiotic. And then let your kids get out. In fact, I wrote a book, Allie, I don't know if you know this, it's called Eat Dirt. And I really get into all of this in terms of this sort of microbe theory and a lot of what we've been discussing.
Okay. So when you say eat dirt. You're talking about like the local honey and the things like that you're talking about.
I am. Yeah. And here's an example. If you go to your local farmer's market and buy carrots or beets, and you just bring them home and just wash them off with water or baking soda or vinegar, whatever you're going to use, there are still, if you hold them up real close, you're going to see little brown specks still in there. Those are called soil-based organisms. Okay. So they're actually probiotics on the outside of the plant that when we consume them, they help us break down and actually digest the food better. So somebody's going to the grocery store and buying those baby carrots that are kind of all shiny, they've been peeled and sprayed with probably chlorine, they're not getting those soil-based organisms like you would be if you were, you know, buying those carrots. And so, yeah, I'm not saying go out and eat handfuls of dirt, but I am saying a little dirt under your fingernails, kids being exposed to that, actually is good for their immune system.
Okay, that's good, because my two older kids really like to hunt beetles and worms and roly-polies right now. So I'm glad that it's not only like an okay pastime for them as far as like not being in front of screens, but also maybe for their physical health too.
Well, there's something really interesting. It's called hormesis. And this is why we've all seen the cold plunge. You've seen how popular cold plunging has become. Mm-hmm. So the reason why cold plunging can be beneficial is it helps your body be able to adapt better to cold in the future. Okay, that's part of the benefit.
Okay.
And so when you're eating these soil-based organisms or exposed to viruses or like the chicken pox, like when I was a kid, now your body's better able to defend itself in the future. If you never let the body fight a fight on its own, it can't become a better fighter. Right. That's part of the idea.
Okay, what do you think about cold plunging specifically for women? Because I've heard mixed things.
Here's what I think. It is completely person dependent. Like my dietary philosophy is everybody is a unique individual.
Yeah.
And everybody needs a different type of diet for the most part. Now, there are certain principles like eat real food, you know, for most people. And I think generally speaking, more people do better eating organic meat, a lot more vegetables and fruits. But everybody's unique individual. If I have somebody with cancer come in, I'm going to have them do a lot of greens, some salads, some vegetable juice. But if I put somebody with inflammatory bowel disease, raw vegetables, it's going to wreck their system. So it's highly individualized. So with cold plunge, if you're a woman and you have you have a cold body temperature, okay, you're cold more often than you're warm, I don't think cold plunging is the best. I would recommend infrared sauna. For those women across the board, get an infrared sauna a lot. Cold plunging, if you did it once a week to help your body better adapt to stress, that might be okay. But doing daily cold plunges for women, especially with hypothyroidism or low body temperature, not a good idea.
Okay. And what do you think about red light therapy?
Yeah. Yeah. Red light therapy, what it does, it really activates and helps strengthen our body with what it's called our mitochondria. And so your mitochondria is like the engines of our cells. And so there are benefits of that. And I think one of the reasons why people get sick is there's lack of blood flow and nutrients and oxygen being brought to the area. When you put red light on an area, it's increasing blood flow, oxygen and nutrients being brought to the area. So I do think it's therapeutic. It's a similar thing to the sun. When you get the sun, it's really beneficial in small doses or moderate doses for the skin, for the liver, for the immune system, for your bones, for numerous organs. Red light therapy is it's not as powerful as the sun, but there's still a lot of those similar benefits.
Are you a fan of someone trying to, I don't know the right terminology, get in tune with their, is it circadian rhythms?
Yeah, rhythms.
Yeah, circadian rhythms. Are you someone who believes that that has a lot of benefits, waking up in the morning, grounding, looking at the sun?
Yeah, I am. Now, listen, I think the other thing I'd mention is there's majors and minors. If everybody would try and follow every piece of health advice, it would
be
overwhelming.
It's overwhelming.
So,
it is.
So I would say this, in terms of importance, getting outside daily is pretty high on my list. Just getting outside, going for a walk. It is true, when you see sunlight, unlike indoor light, your body starts to lower the melatonin, raise the cortisol, it starts to balance those hormones. And the way hormones work, it's like a domino. If insulin gets off or melatonin gets off or cortisol gets off, well, then estrogen is off, then progesterone, then testosterone. So there's sort of this thing that happens in the body. So if you can get outside in the morning, get some natural sunlight, it's about 15 minutes is what some of the studies show, it really helps you reset your body for the day, ideally. Now, our body's amazing at adapting. So if you don't, your body will still do it. It'll just take longer and it's not as ideal, but there are definite benefits of getting outside early. Grounding is good. It's not a magic pill. It's not, I mean, again, I think that There are benefits of having our feet directly on the earth, but, and I encourage people to do it, but there are other things that are more important, like just walking.
Yeah. Okay, last sponsor for the day is My Patriot Supply. It's a crazy year. I mean, every year has been a crazy year, especially since 2019, but it's an election year, so things are even crazier. We just don't know what to predict. Feels like right now we're on the brink of World War III. Who even knows what we are about to face in the coming months? You want to make sure that you and your family have an emergency food supply just in case. Hopefully you'll never need it. The good thing is the shelf life is 25 years, but if you do need it, you'll be glad that you have it. Go ahead, get your 3-month emergency food supply kit from My Patriot Supply or the 4-week emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. Whatever you can get, go ahead and get it now. Get one for every member of your family. That's really important and you'll be taken care of. You don't have to worry about that. If you go to preparewithally.com, get as many food kits as your family needs for $50 off each. They will ship fast and free in unmarked boxes. Go to preparewithally.com, preparewithally.com. Speaking of feeling overwhelmed by all of the medical advice out there, one thing that I don't want to say frustrates me, because I've been to the chiropractor, I've been to some more natural doctors, I haven't been to a functional medicine doctor yet, but one thing that they always say, even like getting a massage or something, is that you're stressed. You need to lower your stress levels. And that kind of stresses me out more. Like, I did this assessment that was like, you're in fight or flight too much, and you're parasympathetic. All of that is, it's working too hard, which I understand how that could affect my health. I know that that's not good. But I'm like, okay, but there's only so much I can do to relieve, to relieve stress. I am doing what I think that I can, but my life is just, this is just like the season of life that we're in. Yeah. We've got 3 little kids. We've got a lot going on. It's a happy season, but there's just a lot. And I do kind of feel like I have to be on a lot. And I'm sure that other people have felt that way, that when you're just kind of told by the more functional doctors that, okay, you're stressed, you need to be less stressed, that kind of adds stress. So how do we approach that?
Can I tell you, I mean, I used to have this happen all the time. I would have patients come in and they've maybe been to 10 other doctors, and I would ask them, I'd say, what did your other doctor recommend you do? And they would say something like reduce stress. And I said, well, what did he tell you to do, or she tell you to do? And they would say, well, they didn't. They just said reduce stress. And it's so ridiculous. So for most people, here's the issue. It's not stress. It's that you don't, we're going to have stress with kids. We're going to have stress with career. We're going to have, like, some of that is natural. It's that it's going all day, every day. And so for most people, they just need a schedule to do more things that they enjoy doing. That's really it. That's the top way that people can reduce stress. Cause it is more stressful to be like, and I've seen this with so many patients. I've seen them make themselves worse because they're like, I got to reduce stress. Mm-hmm. So they're running around from appointment to appointment. I'm going to get a massage. I'm going to do red light therapy. Yes. I'm going to do this.
Yes.
So all that being said, here's how you do reduce stress. Schedule lunch with a best friend. Schedule time to go on a walk with your family. Just schedule, take a Sabbath, despite what somebody would believe about, I know on this show, you've got all kinds of different probably beliefs about, should you follow a Sabbath? You shouldn't. But all that being said, I think you probably should take a full day, give it to God and your family. But all that being said, if people want to reduce stress, write down the top 5 or 10 things that you love doing that kind of bring you peace and happiness, reading a novel, whatever it is, and just schedule those things like you schedule other things into your daily schedule. Mm-hmm. I've seen the best results with people and myself just following that philosophy.
I love that, because that is like adding something enjoyable rather than either adding an obligation that you don't really want to do or trying to take something away. Obviously, there are things that we can take out of our lives that are making us unhealthy, like constantly being glued to our phones. But again, trying to take everything away, then I got to add my grounding. I got to look at the sun for 15 minutes. Oh, I didn't do that. Now my entire day is off. Let me try to make it up by doing the red light therapy in the sauna. And I'm not saying all those things are bad. They can all be great things. But if they are causing our stress levels to go up and make us feel like failures every day, then it's probably going to be really counterproductive for our health.
100%. And there are certain conditions. I see a lot of people with Lyme disease, fibromyalgia, certain autoimmune, to where it's, they're making them, what's making them just as sick as possibly a poor diet or other things is just being stressed about their condition, for sure.
Yeah. What, if you were to say in general, you said everyone is bio-individual, but if you were giving general health advice for how to eat, vegan versus carnivore diet versus keto versus just eating everything organically in moderation, like what would you say?
I generally don't like any of those diets.
Okay.
Because it is so individualized. Now, do I think about 10% of people to 20% for a period of time could benefit on ketogenic if they have MS or there's epileptic seizures or something like that? Yes. Do I think if somebody has a really severe form of inflammatory autoimmune disease, they could do well on carnivore for a short time? Yes. Do I think somebody with cancer could maybe benefit on being vegan for to do a cleanse for a couple weeks? Yes. But I think that for, let's call it 75 to 80% of people, you want to try and get organic meat and bone broth and those sort of things. You want to get vegetables. You want to get fruits. You want to try and get some healthy fats, coconut, olive oil, avocado, those sort of things. And then getting some whole grains, ideally that are sprouted or cooked for a long time. Rice made into, we call it congee, but just cooked, it means it's cooked a long time. Sourdough bread. Like I eat sourdough bread. My wife makes it all the time. I love it. It's amazing. And so, you know, you just need to prepare it properly using the ancient grains and it's pretty healthy. So, you know, I really believe in a biblical diet. I mean, if you want to know what I believe in, it's really a biblically based diet that's also based on the individual. I mean, Jesus was eating fish and bread. Solomon ate meat and bread. Abraham ate meat and bread. So there's even this whole paleo movement. I was never part of the paleo movement of remove all grains and this and that, because it's evolutionary. Like I'm a Christian. Like I'm all about what does the Bible teach? What are those biblical principles of health?
Yeah.
And so I really think, let me just say again, meat, vegetables, fruit, if people really focus on those, maybe some healthy fat, then that's going to go a long, long way.
And what would you say for someone who wants to lose weight? Maybe they're already kind of eating like organic foods. Yeah. They're not going out and they're eating fast food, but they're still just not losing the weight. And say they want to or need to lose 20 pounds in a certain amount of time. What do you tell that person?
Well, the first thing I tell them is don't take Ozempic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason is there was a recent study that came out that showed that one of the big issues there is that you're not losing just fat. You're losing a lot of muscle mass and bone density. A study just came out showing that. And so there's a lot of people not realizing, okay, you're keeping the fat, but losing the muscle. That's not good. Or it's about a 15% increase compared to if you were losing weight on your own. So that's a big issue. Also, if you look up the hashtag Ozempic face, you'll see people's face gets sunken in. Mm-hmm. It's because it causes something called gastroparesis, where things don't move through your digestive system as fast. So now you have nutrient malabsorption. So you're not absorbing your vitamins. So people are getting that sunken in look. So that's the first thing. After that, I would say focus on protein and fiber as much as you can. I'd recommend 30 to 50 grams of protein per meal. For most women, I'd say it's going to be about 30 grams. In the morning, that could be a smoothie with some collagen or plant protein, something like that. Maybe it's a half a cup of berries, a little coconut milk.
You like plant protein better than whey protein? Or
well, in reality, the only protein we're typically missing in our diets would be a bone broth protein or a collagen protein.
Okay.
That's going to be the healthiest by
far. Not pea protein. Because I've had it, I don't like how it tastes.
Yeah, so here's what I would say. If people really want to be as healthy as possible, go out and buy bone broth protein or a multi-collagen protein.
Okay.
Because that's that's the type of protein you're not getting the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And it's the one that's going to actually have the most anti-inflammatory healing benefits is bone broth protein in that. So do that. And then if you want to add in, if somebody tolerates whey pretty well, then they could do that. If somebody tolerates pea or rice, that's fine too. But I would say still aim for that 30 grams of protein a day in the morning. And it could also be, it could be pastured eggs. It could be chicken or turkey or beef sausage. Right. I think all those things are fine. It's a whole nother topic. I don't like pork, but we'll stay
away from that. Good to know.
And the reason is it's not from being under the law. It's more they're the highest carrier of parasites of any animal.
Well, I've thought about that recently that, you know, I don't believe that we have to abide by Old Testament cleansing laws, but I'm like, there's probably a reason that God had for it, right?
And guess what? The dirtiest, most unhealthy seafood is it's shrimp. It's shellfish. And so,
interesting.
Yeah. And so I would say get protein and then lots of fiber berries are the best for fruit. So lots of berries and then vegetables. And if you can really focus on doing a diet high in protein, high in fiber, people will tend to lose weight pretty quickly. Doing lower, if you're going to do carbs more in the morning, less at night.
I was going to ask about that. Like, do you think, is there anything to going to bed hungry that helps someone lose weight?
Well, it's less about hunger. It's more about giving your body time to digest before you lay down. Because when you lay down, it's a lot harder on your system. So you typically want 3 hours. Earlier dinners are better. And so if you eat at 6, go to bed around 9, something like that. It tends to be. You can tell I've got a 3/4-year-old right now, or almost 4-year-old. And so it's like I'm sleeping with her right now, and my wife's sleeping with a 4-month-old, and we're doing a little bit. And I'm like,
sleep is hard to come.
But my point is I'm going to bed at like 8 p.m. right now, so I'm loving it. It's
great. Okay, so you're getting plenty of sleep then. Okay, well that's good.
Yeah, it's not as restful through the night, but I'm in bed a long time. I'll say that. So
okay, gotcha.
If people want to lose weight again. Protein and fiber. And then the other thing would be movement. I mean, ideally it's weight training followed by a little bit of interval training. So if 3 days a week you went to the gym, did 30 minutes of weights, 15 minutes of like a interval cardio, that's the ideal. If you can do those things while also doing things you love, keeping stress low. But people will lose weight very quickly if they do mostly meat, vegetables, berries, and then throw in some other real food along with that.
Okay, last thing, if you had a microphone and everyone in the United States could listen to you for 30 seconds and you had to give them like one health tip that you felt like would make the biggest difference for everyone, what would you say?
You know, for me, this may surprise some people. I have been doing a practice, I call it my spiritual triathlon every morning for about 20 years. And so what I do is I wake up in the morning and I go on a walk, I listen to praise and worship music, and I just thank God for how blessed I am. And so I do that while I go on a 15-minute walk. And I'm getting sunshine, I'm getting a walk, and most importantly, I'm praising God and starting my mind right with that. I'll go inside, I'll read my Bible for a period of time, and then after that, I'll spend some time in prayer. And for me, just the peace that brings, the growth it brings, I think what it does for my entire day, I think is the most important health practice that I have. Now, if there's just something secondary that people want to know that's more sort of nutrition, health related, I would say just change breakfast. Mm. I mean, people feel like, I've got a hot, cold plunge. I've got to infrared. I've got it. If you just change breakfast and you're getting started, that's 1/3 of your diet. That's actually a really, really momentous change. And so I would say try and do something like a superfood smoothie, do a half a cup of berries, do 30 to 50 grams of protein, do a little bit of like water, coconut milk or something else in there. And if you just change that, that could radically change your life. And hey, if you couple those two together, you know, sort of the philosophy, you win the morning, you win the day. I think it's a great start to the day for people.
That's good. Man, there's a million more things that I could ask, but we went through a lot today and you gave us a lot of insight. So thank you so much. Tell everyone, you got a new book out. So tell everyone about your new book, where they can get that and how they can follow you.
Yeah. So I have a new book out. It's called Think This, Not That. I've been teaching everyone how to eat this, not that for years. So the idea is think this, not that. And the information in the book actually saved my life. I didn't get into this, but
that's fine.
2 years ago, I went in for, I injured my back, went in for a real simple procedure and, using actually natural form medicine called stem cell. And something happened during the procedure, A few months later, I woke up, I couldn't walk. And I didn't walk for a year. This time last year, I wasn't able to walk.
Wow.
Yeah, for a full year. And so I wrote that entire book while I was on my back and went through how I healed, the mindset involved, a number of things. And so the book's called Think This, Not That. Just hit the New York Times bestseller list last week, which I'm excited about.
That's amazing.
So yeah, people could get that on Amazon. And also I have a podcast, which I'd love to have you on sometime. It's called The Dr. Josh Axe Show. We cover a lot of health topics specifically and some, you know, growth topics. And then social media handles just at Dr. Josh Axe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Yes. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your wisdom.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Allie.
All right, guys, hope you enjoyed that conversation. Before we head out, I do want to remind you guys to check out the new documentary on Blaze Originals. You can go to AllieOriginals.com. This is an amazing, amazing documentary about how politicians get filthy rich. They go into public service not having very much money at all, and then by the time they're out, 20, 30 years later, they're millionaires and billionaires. How is that happening? Well, this documentary reveals the corrupt scheme that's going on behind the scenes, largely funded by our tax dollars, for how the Nancy Pelosi's of the world are getting so filthy rich. Check it out. You've got to know everything that's going on in Washington, D.C. Go to AllieOriginals.com. You get $30 off your annual subscription. AllieOriginals.com. All right. That's all we got time for today. We will be back here tomorrow.